There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 726, May 9th, 2017. Nasser?
Thank you, sir. I say greetings and Finlandia regards from Sochi. Back to you, Comrade Clark.
Thank you, Nasser. On today's program, Fernando loves the Speedway. I'm wrong about Bottas, maybe. Williams celebrates 40 years. And Johnny Rutherford goes back to McLaren. We have an interview with IndyCar driver Nico Jammin. And don't forget, F1 Weekly now available on WROCK Radio, streaming on WLOR.net, Wednesdays at 11 p.m., Saturdays at 3 p.m. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing very good, sir. I'm feeling really excited after you told me that F1 Weekly is the most popular podcast in Ukraine.
Exactly. That's correct. We have topped the charts. We're going to the top like a bullet.
From Kiev to Odessa.
Exactly. So it's exciting, and we'd like to welcome the listeners from the Ukraine.
Yes, sir. Very good. So how was your Snowball Rally event, if we can get some info on that?
That was exciting. Snowball Rally went well, about 60 vintage cars. I did not win this year, as I did in 2015, but still lots of fun going through the back roads of California and Nevada. And, of course, beautiful North Lake Tahoe, snow in the mountains, fun driving the Citroën Traction Avant 11 Légère. So, lots of fun. I mean, it's good to get out and give the car a little exercise.
Yes, very true. The big question is the Citroën on Michelin or Pirelli spec tires?
Michelin tires forever, sir.
That's very good. Good choice.
And these are the ones that expand.
Ah, the Hungarian special.
Correct.
Or Nando special.
Bravo, Fisico. So anyway, did you watch the rookie shakedown of Fernando at the Speedway?
I watched some of it, and I'm very happy because, you know, I like motorsports, all kinds of motorsports. And this is giving IndyCar racing a lot of exposure. And his testing was viewed by like 2 million people. They were streaming live. So I was at work, so could not do that. But I did watch some of it. But very good to have such a big name at the Indy 500.
I agree. I thought it was very, very exciting. And I watched it, and it was mesmerizing. And he knows how to go left very, very well.
Yeah, you know, and also the Andretti team is also very impressed by his work ethics, which, you know, I'm surprised they would be surprised. I mean, knowing who this guy is in terms of his achievements. But I'm very happy. I am really looking forward to the Indy 500. Good chance I might be watching with some members of F1 Weekly European operations, because that's where I will be around that time.
Yeah, no, I agree. But still, it's going to be very exciting. 2 million people were watching. And it was fascinating how we slowly built up to the 222-mile-an-hour mark, blah, blah, blah. But still, I think Fisico was watching.
Yeah, and you know, people talk about he needs to do this, he needs to do that. Keep in mind, you know, going as far as 1982, Teo Fabi, who never won a Formula One race, came here and with a car that was seriously underfunded, he put that car on pole position for the Indy 500 with the new track record. I'm not sure if it was, I think it was 82 or 83. And then damn near won the championship that season as a rookie. And we saw what Montoya did, first time he raced there, led 167 of the 200 laps. So if Nando stays out of trouble, he has a good package. I mean, he can win, just like Rossi did last year.
Oh, yeah. Can you imagine? That would be so exciting. And that would, I mean, that would fuel the Fernando fire.
Yeah, and I think this is really, really very good for IndyCar racing. And I think, you know, because, you know, for almost a decade, the family that owns Hulman family, they were subsidizing IndyCar racing. I seriously think they should pay some $5-6 million to a backmarker operation and bring Bruno Senna and Nicola Prost as teammates. Can you imagine that publicity?
It would be unbelievable. No, yeah. I agree. IndyCar is going to do well. I think F1 will do well. Fernando is going to really be a star. He could get a star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame.
Yeah, this is an incredible racing talent. It is just unbelievable that a guy who dethrones Michael Schumacher has not won a championship from those days.
Well,
almost 10 years ago.
We know how to call that, le package.
Yes, and bad decisions. But, you know, these things happen to all the best.
So, obviously, I have to eat crow after I said Bottas would never win a Grand Prix. Of course, I say that, and the following weekend, he wins.
Well, you know, we've been following his career from his Formula 3 days. The guy is a good talent. And also, you know, when he won the Formula Renault Euro Cup, which is a very competitive series, the guy he beat by a few points to win the championship was none other than Daniel Ricciardo. So this guy is has a lot of hidden talent. And, you know, what I felt when I saw him win, you know, is I felt sorry for the likes of Hülkenberg and Romain Grosjean. Because, you know, we've been crowing about these two drivers for a long time, too. And I think, if you just don't get into a top team, I mean, look, he would have no chance to win if he was racing at Williams. So being in the right place at the right time is very, very important.
I completely agree. Timing is really, I think, it's almost half of it.
Yeah, and for reference, we can refer him and Nico Hülkenberg to Fernando.
Indeed, poor Fernando, but Fernando is still having a lot of fun. He looked like he enjoyed himself in the United States, and it was interesting to see Mario Andretti there. The Andretti family, really, they have to be pretty proud of putting this together, because this is a great deed.
No, absolutely.
So there you have it, anyway.
And Michael Andretti, you know, he owns that team, Andretti Autosport. They are involved in Indy Lights, the Formula E, Global Rallycross, and, you know, a lot of things they're doing. And they're doing pretty good everywhere. So that's good for the Andretti name.
That's true. Michael Andretti is turning out to be a pretty good businessman.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, talking of Andretti, I hate to bring this up in the early part, but, you know, news. You know, John Andretti, who is Mario's nephew, which means he's Aldo Andretti's son. He raced in IndyCars, NASCAR. This poor guy has been diagnosed with colon cancer, and it's in pretty, you know, serious stage. So we would like to, you know, wish him well and also his family. So I bring this up since you brought up the Andretti name, and I thought we'll let our listeners know.
That's a good thing to do, Nasser. Keep up the good work. Also, it's a celebration of 40 years for Williams, dating back to 1977 as official Formula One team. Of course, he was racing in Grand Prix racing going back to 75, I believe, between 69 and 75. But congratulations to Frank. Keep up the good work there. Hopefully, they'll get back to the front of the spear. And, you know, they're starting to look really good. Felipe Massa, I'm sort of happy that he came back.
Yeah, you know, talking about Frank Williams racing in late 60s, on a historical note, you know, in 1968, you know, we all know that when Max Mosley made his Formula 2 debut, it was at Hockenheim in 1968, and we all know what happened on that day.
Indeed.
The thing with Frank Williams, you know, in 1968, there was a race at a small track in Denmark, and Peter Revson's brother, was killed in an accident in that race. And Frank Williams, I'm told, was also one of the drivers in that race. Can you believe that?
Wow.
Yeah, this, you know, these people who have a passion for racing, they eat, live, you know, anything and everything is motor racing for them, which is fantastic. You know, that's why we get people like, you know, Frank Williams and Enzo Ferrari and Colin Chapman and, of course, Scott Rogers.
Exactly. Thank you very much. So back to Sochi. That was exciting. Putin around, you know. Putin loves motorsports.
You know, people. I know a lot of people complain about him being there. But, you know, from a motorsports point of view, it's like this, you know. If President Sarah Palin shows up at Texas for Austin for the U.S. Grand Prix, I mean, can you imagine how popular Formula One will be?
I completely agree. No, I think it's fine. I wish, I hope Trump goes to Austin.
Oh, yeah, that would be great.
So exciting. But, yes, qualifying was exciting. Now, I didn't get to see it because I was on the road again. But boy,
Colly was a serious case of red scare for the Silver Arrows. And interestingly, you know, this is how, you know, if you look at when was the last time McLaren won a Constructors' Championship, this was the first time an all-Ferrari front row was seen in Formula One racing since the 2008 French Grand Prix at your hometown, Manicourt. And I think it was Kimi Raikkonen who was on pole with Massa. And row two was all Mercedes in Russia. What was interesting is that Bottas was ahead of LCH by over half a second. And I think the whole weekend for Lewis Hamilton, he was having one of those, you know, calling in a sick day kind of day that I just cannot perform at my best. Practice, quality, and the race, so which was not good, but I don't think it's going to be happening every race that way.
No, I don't think so either. But it was interesting how Bottas really dominated over LCH and... But the Ferraris look so strong, it was hard to believe that they couldn't pull a victory out of this.
Yeah, you know, I was very, very surprised at the start because with Seb on pole, Kimi next to him, it was widely expected that the winner will be Sebastian Vettel. But Bottas had a mighty start and grabbed the lead well before the end of lap one. And from then on, he looked like a race winner every lap, and I have to say that.
That's true. I mean, he did have a great start, and that start was very reminiscent of Fernando 2006.
Yeah, well, no matter what happens, Fernando comes into the conversation.
Well, those Renault starts in 06 were pretty fantastic.
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. And the cars used to sound so beautiful, too.
Oh, machismo. But no, LCH has always had a problem with the starts, and if Bottas shows that he's machismo at the starts... This could spell something very interesting.
Yeah, I think Lewis will be the alpha male of this combination. But with every time Bottas wins, and especially if there's if Lewis is not right behind him in second, then he will take a lot of points from Lewis Hamilton. And this him being there is the best news for Sebastian Vettel now that he has a very competitive car.
I agree. It's interesting. And of course, the disappointment of Fernando not starting the Grand Prix. But let's talk about Force India. They, you know, they admit that Ferrari and Renault have made steps forward because they know they're still stuck with the same Mercedes package they had last year. And now they're having a little bit of trouble fighting with Red Bull, but they say they're going to take it to Red Bull, and both drivers make it into Q3, which is great. And also the Renault package with Nico Hülkenberg is looking much improved.
Yeah, and which is not having a good effect on Julian Palmer at Renault. But you know, this Pink Panther Brigade, as I call them, Force India, they got both drivers in Q3, like you said, and both of the drivers have been scoring quite a bit of points for them. And you know, on the flip side, I don't know if it's flip side or it could be a better side, there are now rumors that Bernie Ecclestone, David Brabham, and the American Consortium, a combination is trying to buy Force India from Vijay Mallya and Roy Subrata Sahara, and they will use the Brabham name. So if this goes through, that would be fantastic. And of course, we've mentioned that Vijay Mallya is now, you know, hanging out in England because Indian government is trying to extradite him. I think he has a hearing coming up in the next few days. And his partner, the name Sahara, that guy is already in jail. So apparently they were trying to get like $200-$250 million for the team. And this Dutch family, the Mol family, Michel Mol, I think is the name, they have like a 5 or 10% stake in the company. So these people will make some money, but they're not going to get, from what I'm hearing and reading, is that maybe they will get $150 to $170 million, which is still, quite a bit of money. But it could be nice to see Bradham name come back.
That would be fantastic.
What would be really good if they bring back the Parmalat sponsorship and put Nelson Piquet Jr. back in Formula One?
I don't think Nelsino is going to be back in Formula One.
Yeah, I don't think so. But he has a brother, younger brother, Pedro Piquet, who is, peddling his way to the top of the grid. But, he's not as talented as his papa. Papa was very good, and I was a huge fan of Nelson Piquet in his Brabham days.
Absolutely. Everybody loved Piquet when Piquet was machismo.
Absolutely. And, you talk about your man, Fernando, being out of the race. I'm at loss. I don't even know what to say now. But only thing I can say is that one point that was proven that misery loves company. It is now official that Sauber will have Honda power from next season. And hopefully someday in our lifetime, Honda will get their act together. I mean, this thing is just getting one race, one driver doesn't start. Next race, the other driver doesn't start. I'm surprised these people are not throwing a serious tantrum. Maybe because everybody, McLaren is getting a lot of money from Honda. So maybe they are sucking it up. And Nando is getting a lot of money. Honda is paying his salary. And then poor guy, Stoffel Vandoorne, I think he's just happy to be in Formula One. And very deservedly so.
I understand. And it's sad to be, you would think, for such a young man, and to be driving. And we used to call a top team.
Yeah, it's fun. I think after Ferrari, they are the most successful team in terms of Grand Prix wins.
That's the irony of it all. To get a drive like that, which is really a dream for most drivers, is a disaster this season.
I mean, look at the name, people who became world champion. Alain Prost, Niki Lauda, Ayrton Senna, Mika Hakkinen, and it's just, and of course, LCH made his dramatic debut with this team, but now this thing is like in very, very bad shape. Do you remember this car, how the McLaren team was down in the dumps in the after Honda pulled out and then they had Peugeot engine and...
Oh, the Peugeot engines was great.
Yeah, and some of those cars were so ugly. Then they got Nigel Mansell to drive for them. He could not fit in the car. I mean, and then they went on to win, a lot of races in championship. Mika Hakkinen and then Kimi Raikkonen, when he was there, man, that's the Kimi Raikkonen I missed of the McLaren days.
Yes, the McLaren days, and of course those were the fragile McLaren days. I mean, you either won or exploded, or came completely apart.
Yeah, I remember when Kimi and Montoya were teammates, they were having a lot of, let's just say, Q&A, quality assurance, issues. I remember in one race, I don't remember which driver had it first, but they were showing the in-car camera, helmet cam or something, and one of the rear-view mirrors came loose and it's flapping around there, and then... in the next couple of races later, it happened to the same car, but on the other side, on the left-hand side or whatever it was.
Yeah.
That was pretty pathetic.
That was pretty pathetic. But like you said, Nando not being able to start this race was just a shame. Honda and McLaren are lucky that we haven't seen any photographs of the camping chair.
Since he could not... Yeah, well, I was going to bring that up, even though the island is... what he could have done and done something else, maybe put on some, funky Russian hat and Cossack, sword or something. But this thing is, I'm very, very surprised that with all these people, especially like Eric Bouyer, Nando, and Stoffel and other people, that they have not thrown like a serious tantrum. Do you remember when Michael Schumacher was at Ferrari, something went wrong with this car and he came to the garage and he threw his helmet. Do you remember that
event? Yeah.
And when also with one of the Ferrari mechanics, when they lost the championship, Massa lost the championship, I think he threw a tantrum also. So I'm very, very surprised these people have kept their cool.
Well, these days, I mean, there's a camera everywhere. Every phone is a camera.
Yeah.
So the optics of a team are much different than they used to be back in the day. Everything is reserved and kept inside the body.
Yeah, and but the thing about GP2 engine of all the places at Suzuka, I mean, that to me was more insulting than Sebastian Vettel going off on Charlie Whiting.
Well, I don't know about that. I thought Sebastian Vettel going off on Charlie Whiting was pretty intense. But on the other hand, Fernando was right. The truth sometimes hurts.
Yes, that he was.
Anyway, I was impressed with this start on from Bottas. I mean, he showed full testicular fortitude at that start where Lewis Hamilton sort of got lost and fell behind the Ferraris. Bottas, I mean, that was just right out of the gate. By turn two, he was in the lead, and that's what he needed to do. He did what he needed to do to win this Grand Prix. I thought once he took that lead, he kept that lead, and with good pit stops and everything, it was outstanding.
Yeah, and he drove a race that we would expect from LCH, and LCH drove a race that we would expect from Fisico. But I like his comment late in the race. He was on the Elvis Presley program, a little more action, a little less conversation. I thought that was very cool.
Yes, less talking. I like that. That was very, very good. And in the middle, I thought the race was not that exciting, and I know you love all racing, no matter what. But for me, it was a bit processional. And once again, Haas, Romain Grosjean, gets into a tangle at the beginning of the Grand Prix. He's out, where Haas is really not doing what we're expecting them to do. And they're still having Carbon Industries, Hitco, whatever, brake issues.
Talking about the nature of the race, up until the beginning of the charge of the Red Brigade by Mr. Sebastian Vettel, of course, I'm enjoying the race, but I was thinking that I get the frustration of people who write on forum and other forums also that Formula One is processional, is very boring. And I said, yeah, you know, they were talking about there was no overtaking except for Bottas jumping the Ferraris. But man, the last few laps made up for the early dullness of the race.
That's true. And that was the other thing I could not understand. It's just a little bit late. But Vettel was catching him so quickly in the last few laps. And I just couldn't figure out if they've got this kind of race pace. And I know that the fuel tanks are getting lighter. But really, the Ferrari had much more pace than the Mercedes. The Mercedes is much tougher on tires. If this continues, I think Ferrari should be able to take this championship because they really do have the better package.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And you know, the thing is, we've said this before, and I think this just may happen. If the cars are equally, you know, somewhat equally competitive, advantage goes to Sebastian Vettel, and for the simple reason, he does not make as many mistakes as LCH. He goes off on people, and I remember him getting pissed off at Jean-Éric one some years ago, but he does not make as many mistakes as Lewis Hamilton. So I have a feeling, not that I want this, but I mean, I want to see a great season and let the best man win, but I have a feeling that we're going to see regime change this year.
Perhaps, but Raikkonen is also getting pity from Vettel. Vettel saying that he deserves better results. You know, I don't know if he feels sorry for Raikkonen or what have you, but in the end of the day, you make your own luck, and the driver is responsible for better results. So, Raikkonen is getting up there. He's not a young whippersnapper anymore. I think he should take...
He should retire from motor racing before motor racing retires him.
It would be a lot better. I mean, he's got a championship. He's done well. He's done a lot in the United States. He's done some rallying. He could do a lot of things, and I think he would be, you know, he would look great in Le Mans.
Yeah, and, you know, he was a serious second banana at Ferrari when Nando was there. I mean, he really was nowhere near Nando. and he's playing a second fiddle too. But I think this guy's going to win a race. Ferrari package has come on pretty strong, and sooner or later we're going to have some, you know, let's get physical between the two McLarens or one McLaren, one Ferrari. I'm expecting more wins from Bottas and, of course, LCH. But I think Kimi is going to get a win or two also.
I don't know about that, and I'm going to do him a favor by saying Kimi is not going to get any wins this season. So there you go. Don't tell anybody that I'm not a nice guy.
Your reputation is worldwide. We all know that.
Especially in the Ukraine.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I know. I know where I'm going on vacation next.
Well, Odessa is a very nice place, I have to say.
Thank you. Thank you. But yes, having Bottas win, we haven't had a Finnish driver win in a long time.
Yes, and talking of Finnish drivers, I think he is the fifth Finnish driver to win a Grand Prix, apart from Kimi, Kovalainen, Mika Hakkinen, and Keke Rosberg. So it's good to see a Finlandia driver winning again. I'm happy about that.
That's very true. You know what? I want to quickly mention, of course, it's been 50 years since the terrible accident at Monaco with Bandini, who died 2 days later. That was on May 7th, 1967. So there you have it, Nas. Now I'm doing your job.
No, that was a very sad. And I used to remember when I was back home, I had access to some old racing books, and there was a lot of information on him because these books were printed like in the late 60s, early 70s. But what I, found so interesting about him, I was reading many years ago about him, and it said that he was born in the Italian province of Barce in Cyrenaica, which sounds very Italian names, you know. And I could never find these two towns or province in Italy. I had all sorts of maps, and I kept looking. And then one day I read that these towns and province are in Libya. And actually, I knew a Libyan lady. She told me Benghazi is in the Cyrenaica province. And that's where he was born, in Libya, and which was kind of interesting. Very sad event, obviously, how it worked out. And of course, Senna and Roland Ratzenberger also had their accidents in May. So, and talking on that note, poor Joe Leonard passed away. And we'll talk a little bit more about him later in the show.
Excellent, excellent, very true. I had forgotten. Keep up the good work, Nas. We'll have a good Motorsports Mondial. But please continue our wrap-up of this race.
Anything surprising? Okay, I have a question for you. Do you think McLaren will have a podium finish this year?
No.
I agree with you. Okay, so now, we talked about Kimi already. So his third place resulted in first non-podium finish for Lewis Hamilton. So this was something I did note with interest. And also another guy, Max Verstappen, he was fifth, and he had a very quiet race by his standard. Normally, you will hear somebody bitching about his driving, that he's, moving over too many times, or he pushed me around. But this race, he was like not even there. What did you make of that quiet performance by Mr. Verstappen?
Well, quiet performance by Verstappen, because he was watching out for his brakes that caused Ricciardo to have to DNF because of brake issues. I say the Renault package is good, but the problem is Red Bull has bigger problems. I believe that the aero package on the Red Bull isn't as good as last year's. They're struggling with brakes, and I think Red Bull didn't do a great job in designing this car. It's a little off, and both drivers are struggling.
Yeah, apparently they have put Mr. Adrian Newey back in charge for the to look at what the problem is. Obviously, they had a much better package, I think, last year. And talking of Renault, it's already in the news, and I'm sure you know this, that apparently they have made a serious offer to Nando to jump ship one more time.
They have, but I heard it's serious, but it's not ridiculous.
Yeah, but I think it may be, as much as I would like to see the Honda package do well, I just have a feeling that Renault will win a race before McLaren Honda.
I think you're very, very correct. You're on the right track. I think they'll have a podium before Honda. And if they take a couple more steps, and of course, as we get to Europe, Renault said that they're going to be delaying the upgrades to the motor for reliability. I think they're sandbagging a little bit there, but I believe Renault is back in town, and if they can prove that the speed is there and all they need is 6/10, then the music starts playing and Fernando goes bravo.
And I don't think we will see Julian Palmer at Renault next year. I think they will retain Nico and probably bring in Nando or some other whippersnapper. But things are looking good, and you know, the more manufacturers do well, the better for motorsport.
Yeah, Julian Palmer is in big trouble. I mean, he's being completely blown away.
Yeah,
and that does not look good.
Yeah, and you know, that's what really happened to our friend Esteban Gutierrez. You know, he came so impressively through the system. And in GP2, he was good, won races, but it was almost running out of steam. But when he came into Formula One and was teammate with Nico Hülkenberg at Sauber, I mean, Nico totally blew him away. And, you know, it's no surprise Nico is still there and Esteban is not in Formula One. And but, you know, like I said, both Nico and Romain Grosjean, we've been following them with a lot of interest for many years now. And these are kids who won championships in every series before arriving in F1. And you cannot say that about a lot of drivers. But somehow missed the boat to a top team. And as they say at UPS, no package, no delivery.
Yeah.
But one kid that also we've been following for a few years, and this guy is really, really doing well, Esteban Ocon. You know, his story, if anybody wants to read, you know, people say you got to be super rich to go racing. They need to do some reading on Esteban Ocon. Comes from a very humble background, and he was 10th in first three races, and now he has finished 7th in Russia. So I think this guy is this kid, put him in a Mercedes, he's going to win races.
That's very true. I think he's talented. As long as he stays out of trouble, he's going to do just fine.
Yeah, no, he's a very good kid, very polite, and very nice kid, just like Bottas, you know, easy to deal with. And he's under contract to Mercedes. He's a Mercedes development driver, so I think the future is very bright for him.
He's got a good future right now.
Yes, and also, you know, Massa was 9th and Carlos Sainz Jr. Collected the final championship point. And, you know, when our friend Crashado was racing, there was a website. Has Maldonado crashed today? Now they have a new website. It has Lance Stroll crashed today. So he finally, I think he was 11th in Russia. He finally finished the race, so which is good for him. And he's a very quick talent. There's no question about it. And I would love to see him, you know, keep finishing races and keep moving up, you know.
Right, right. I agree with you.
Another thing about, sorry to butt in, this talk about between Sebastian Vettel and Massa. Some say that Felipe helped his former teammate Bottas win the race, but Sebastian was not happy with the Williams driver. And Massa's version was that he backed off on corner 4, but Seb did not pass him. And in the Felipe was quoted as saying, and I watched the video also, that he really likes to complain. And Mr. Toto Wolff joked about the whole thing, saying he will buy Massa a beer. So Maybe he did not mean to, but somehow he helped Bottas. But the race is over and we move on.
I did laugh because Massa did hold him up quite a bit, and that was the end of the chase, you may say.
Yeah. But sometimes it's good to see a rookie winner, you know.
Oh, no doubt. But I still go back to when Massa, in qualifying, complained about Fernando holding him up when Fernando was like a mile up the road.
Was that Massa or Fisichella?
It was Massa.
Massa, right?
Yeah.
In the Ferrari. Yeah, Adam, that was a joke, man. That was really, really a joke.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Nas, I'm getting pumped up about this interview that's coming up after Motorsports Mondial, so I'm thinking maybe a break, glass of water.
Yes, sir. We shall return.
So there you go. We'll be back after these brief messages.
Thinking of a career in Formula One? Already have a motorsports job, but thinking about jumping into F1? Our team at Motorsports Career Advisor recently finalized the results of our interviews with several top motorsports recruiters and has compiled them into our 2017 Motorsports Resource Guide called The Number One Recruiter Tested Method to Landing the Interview for Your Dream Job in F1. If you've heard our radio spots before, maybe you don't know that up to 1,000 action-oriented motorsports enthusiasts contact us every month to get our guides. But it was our motorsports recruiter partners that challenged us to go even further. And here's what they convinced us to do. For a limited time, we're giving away a pre-release sample of our 2017 resource guide, the number one recruiter-tested method to landing the interview for your dream job in F1. Get yours now at F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com. F1 is extremely competitive. Be the first to see the guide and jump ahead of your job competition. Go to F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com now for the 2017 pre-release before the countdown expires, and you'll get a sneak peek at a guide that others will soon pay to receive. That's F1RecruiterTestedMethod.com.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the King, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. And it's been a week more than a normal podcasting. So we do a brief recap of what has happened since then, since our last podcast. Well, MotoGP was in Austin a few weeks ago, and amazingly, 5 years in a row, Marc Marquez on a Honda hanging high in Texas. Valentino Rossi, the grand old piano of MotoGP, keeps on playing the right key and now leads the championship as his teammate Maverick Vinales, who won the opening two races, crashed out in Austin. But since then, there was a race this past weekend in Jerez de la Frontera, and it was an all Espanol podium, which is good for the local hombres. Danny Pedrosa winning on a Honda, his Honda teammate. Marc Marquez second, and third was Mr. Jorge Lorenzo. And he is very, very happy because this was his first podium as a Ducati rider. Sir, do you have any interest in the motorcycle racing?
You know, I like it, but I'm not a motorcycle guy. So, because when I drove a motorcycle, I crashed.
Okay.
I was the crashado of motorcycle riding.
On two wheels, yeah.
Correct.
But I loved when this, I went to the MotoGP race at Laguna Seca, which, you know, was not too far from, you know, where I was, and fantastic track. And they had one of the greatest MotoGP battles between that Rossi and Casey Stoner. And I really, you know, felt this is what people must have felt at Dijon Prenois 79. Okay, now there's also IndyCar racing. The big race, Indy 500, is coming up this month, so it will be a great event. Now, this is of interest to me, and I'm sure it will be for you. Well, I have some interesting news involving one of our favorite last names in motorsports. There was recently a race, I think it was British F3, and a driver was turned around after contact with another driver, and the other driver was excluded from the results after the race for driving in a manner not compatible with safety. Now, you and I don't know a lot of racing drivers from Venezuela, but would you like to guess the last name of this driver?
I would. And now, in the racing dictionary, this last name is a synonym for crashing and disregard for safety, and that is Maldonado.
Yes, sir. And the first name is Manuel Maldonado. And, of course, he is related to our good friend, Pastor Maldonado.
Interesting, but it does seem to be a genetics issue.
Yes, and these things happen. Okay, one thing, you know, I would like to mention that maybe most of our listeners, especially here in the U.S., may already know. Between Fox Sports, CBS Sports, and NBC Sports, we're getting a lot of motor racing, you know. Sometimes it's tape delay, same day. Like, you know, I was able to watch the DTM race from Hockenheim Ring. And there is also, they had this fantastic Blancpain GT racing from Brands Hatch. So there's a lot of motorsports if folks want to enjoy these things. And also recently there was some sad news. There was a young kid who was killed in Fernando Alonso's karting track in Oviedo. So which is obviously not very good. And then something that, you know, was very sad for me, Joe Leonard passed away. You know, he was originally from San Diego, but then spent most of his life in San Jose. And when I came here in 1985, I tried very quickly to get to him so I can, you know, do an interview with him. So I met him at his house. He used to live in San Jose, very close to the home of Willie T. Ribbs, and he had known Willie since he was a kid. So I went to his house, did a big interview with him. He was very nice to me, talked about a lot of things. And, you know, he's the John Surtees of American motorsports. He was motorcycle champion on two wheels, AMA champion, and then became Indy car champion. And 1 year he lost the Indy 500 because late in the race, caution came. And at the restart, he had this STP turbine car. Some small $2 part broke, and he lost the race. And my story that I did with him, I don't know if you remember, there used to be a magazine called On Track. It appeared in 1986 in that magazine, so I was very happy about it. And so it's another sad passing of a big American racing legend. And every year we go through some people passing away, which is very sad. I hope there was some coverage about him on the local San Jose newspaper.
I don't know. I don't get the paper. The San Jose Mercury News is not what it used to be, Nasser.
Why is that?
I don't know. I think budget and this thing called the internet.
Oh, yeah. The internet has done a great damage to a lot of old type stuff. But, you know, life has to go on and time moves on and a new sun comes up. Or I said the same old sun comes up every day. And now, shall we talk about this, your homeboy, Mr. Nico Jamin, also known as Nico Jamin in the U.S.?
Absolutely. Monsieur Jamin. I like it.
Yeah, he is from Rouen. And I talked to him about Rouen Lazy Art Racing Circuit. And he was initially, how I got to know him is that he came under the management of Nicola Todd at one time, and he's no longer in that program. And I had a friend, you know, Olivier, he used to work there. And he told me about him when he came here. So he's done very well in the U.S. circuit. He's now in Indy Lights. So it was nice talking to him about his career in racing here in the U.S. and about the Rouen track back in France. So I hope people enjoy this interview, and we hope to catch up with him soon when he is in IndyCar racing.
Okay, folks, I'm here in St. Petersburg with Mr. Nico Jamin from Viva la France. Nico, good to meet you. How are you today?
I'm very good, thank you. Good to be here in St. Pete for the first round of the championship.
Okay, I understand you were on your way to play at Wimbledon and Roland Garros. Tell us a little bit about your tennis life and what brought you into the world of motor racing.
I was not quite close to play at Wimbledon and Roland Garros, but I was
trying to be polite.
Yeah, I mean, I was at a pretty good level for my age. I was enjoying a lot playing tennis, and my goal was to become a professional tennis player. I had knee injury when I was about 13 years old, so I had to stop playing tennis, and I wanted to find another sport I could do a high level, and I wouldn't need to use too much my knees. My dad was racing for fun as a gentleman racer in the Clio Cup in France, and that's how I got I started getting involved into racing. Tried a go-kart when I was 14 years old, and I enjoyed it a lot, and we went from there.
Were you very quick when you moved into karting, or like some drivers are natural, or did it take some time to get up to speed?
You know, when I first started racing go-kart, it took me a little bit of time to learn how to be fast, because all the drivers I was racing against has been doing that for maybe 6 or 7 years. So I had to catch up a little bit, but I learned very quickly. I had good coaches with me, and so I did only 1 year of go-kart, and then I went straight to Formula Cars. I think Formula Cars, when we go to Formula Cars, it's almost like going back to zero for everyone, because it's such a different driving style. I mean, I went to Formula Cars when I was 15 and learned and worked my way up to where I am today.
Well, you already answered my next question about adjustment to karting. In 2013, you raced in Formula Renault. What was your impression of Formula Renault Euro Cup, if I understand correctly? What was your impression of racing competition outside your own country?
You know, it's something I really enjoyed. I mean, I loved the racing I did in Europe. Having the chance to race on all these amazing tracks that the Formula One is going as well, you know, Spa-Francorchamps, Hockenheim, Silverstone. Those were amazing track. But I also enjoyed a lot coming here over to the USA. And I love American racing. I love the tracks here. It's more old school, I would say, and I really enjoy that.
Okay. You mentioned Spa, obviously a fantastic place. What's it like going into Eau Rouge real fast?
I mean, it's insane, you know, especially, I mean, with the Formula Renault 2 liter, it's flat out. The first time you go through there, the compression is huge. It's really a unique feeling. I mean, it's what a feeling I never had on any other track. So, I mean, if you have the chance to race there one day, it's really very unique.
Okay, now, how is it like going into the Corkscrew, which is also a fantastic part of a Laguna Seca track?
Yeah, that's a very mythic corner as well. The first time I arrived up there, I had no idea where I was going. I thought it was the end of the world. All you see is the sky. You don't see the track anymore when you're on top. And then you kind of have to guess and aim for these two trees that are in front of you. So that you take a good five laps to get to used to know where to go and know where to apply further and everything, and then the feeling is very, very fantastic because it looks like you just jump in the air and it drops really hard and it's very fun.
Some years ago, somebody gave me a ride at Laguna Seca. When you're going up, you know, all you see is blue sky. Very, very nice track. Okay, you mentioned about coming here. What made you decide to come to the United States and not continue in Europe? I think you made the right decision, but let's hear what your agenda was.
You know, I think when you look at racing in Europe today, I mean, when I was racing in Europe, I wanted to reach the pinnacle of motorsports in Europe, and I think it's Formula One today. The problem is in Europe, I think today, unfortunately, money is more important than talent in motorsport. And I think even if you win the championship, you still have to bring double the budget the next year if you want to keep racing, and if you want to be in Formula One, you have to bring millions, which we knew we didn't have. And even if maybe I had the talent to do it, I don't know. I thought the best way for me to reach the pinnacle of motorsports in the USA was IndyCar, and the Road to Indy is really great for that, because if you win, if you're talented, you're gonna have your chance and race in the next category.
Your homeboy Sebastian Bourdais has been very successful here. Do you talk to him, or are you in touch with him? Has he helped you somewhat?
Yeah, I mean, I'm more in contact with Simon than Seb. But I mean, anytime I have a question, I know I can contact either of them, and they will help me. I've had dinner a few times with Simon. I chat with him. I text him sometimes when I need advice, and he's very open to me. So that's very nice. And I hope I will race against them one day, maybe next year.
Yeah, Pagano is a very cool guy. Some years ago, I went to the Le Mans race and I ran into him. And he says to me, "What are you doing here?" "I'm enjoying the motor racing." He's a very nice guy. Okay, in the U.S., we have a lot of good tracks, Road America, Road Atlanta, Laguna Seca. What's your favorite track in the U.S.?
I think my favorite track in the U.S. is definitely Mid-Ohio. I've had so many success there. I swept the weekend in USF, won all three races in F2000, and won both races last year in Pro Mazda. So now I'm renamed Mr. Mid-Ohio. And I'll try and do the same thing this year in Indy Lights. I really love that track.
Yeah. Now, in 2014, you were ninth in the U.S. Formula 2000. And in 2015, you won the championship, winning 10 of the 15 races. I know you changed team, but what was the main factor for such a dominating season?
You know, I think for me, the first season was my first season in the USA was a big learning curve, because I had a lot of things to learn. All the tracks, the rolling stars, I didn't know the oval. I never raced an oval before, but so I think it was all about learning. I didn't really have any expectation in 2014, and then 2015 I went to the best team in USF 2000. Cape Motorsport gave me a great car all year, and I was able to show what I'm capable of.
Great. Now, last year you were in Pro Master Series and came third in the championship. Tell us a little bit about the high points and low points of the season for you.
You know, I think we had a lot of highs last year with Cape Motorsport. I just think Tim Pelfrey was really dominating with Pato and Aaron, and there was really nothing we could do to challenge them. So I think our main goal was to finish third, which was first of the other guys, I would say. And we did a good job on that. Halfway through the season, I changed cars. I switched the chassis because I was not very happy with the way my chassis was running. And so we switched before Mid-Ohio, and right at Mid-Ohio I won both races, and then we carried on to get 6 podiums to finish the season. So that was pretty good.
Now you are in Indy Lights with Andretti team. Who do you think will be your main challengers this season for the championship?
What's that? Can you repeat?
This year you're with the very good team Andretti Autosport. Who will be your main competitors to try to win the championship?
Yeah, I think you know, it's a very high level field this year in Indy Lights. I think we'll be 5 or 6 drivers to fight for the championship. My teammate Colton will for sure be fast. You know, he's young but very quick coming from Europe. So it's good. It's good to have us two in the team to push each other to our own limits. And then I think for sure Santi will be good for the championship because he finished second last year, almost tied on points. Cal Kaiser, third or fourth season in Indy Lights, I'm not sure. Aaron Tillett will be good. So I think we'll be really 5 or 6 guys to challenge for the championship.
Okay. Now you mentioned about Mid-Ohio being your favorite track. How big was the adjustment? Was it a big challenge for you to get used to oval tracks?
Yeah, it is. It is a big adjustment. You know, it's a totally different driving from what you're used to. You have to really feel everything the car is doing. And I think oval racing is a lot about getting the car well set up for you and be comfortable in the car. So I think it's really, you have to be able to develop the car for you, and for sure the driving as well is different, but I think for me it's a lot about being able to set up the car correctly.
You have been in America for a few years now. What do you enjoy most in America off the racing track? You've been here for a few years now. What do you enjoy most in America off the track?
You know, I love the way people are very welcoming. I mean, you can just walk in town and people ask you how you're doing, and they will want to get to know you and everything. You know, I think that's very nice. American people are very welcoming. On the other hand, I think I'm missing a little bit the French food and the good French wine. But in America, I really enjoy living here. Now I just moved to Indianapolis to be close to the team. I think it's very important, and I love it there.
Yeah. And talking of food, this is like when we interview drivers, especially who come to America from other countries, we always ask this question: when you are here, what is your choice? Hot dogs or cheeseburgers?
What is that called?
Hot dogs or cheeseburgers?
Cheeseburgers.
Very good. Okay, now we talked yesterday briefly. Okay, you are from Rouen, very famous for Grand Prix racing. Have you been to the street that used to hold the race?
Yeah, I have been there in Rouen. I also have been in the main straight line of the Circuit of France, which was a French Grand Prix as well. So yeah, a lot of history around my house, and it's good. Now there's going to be a French Grand Prix next year in Paul Ricard, so it's good to see the F1 back in France.
And you've been to Reims also.
Yeah, I have been to Reims as well on the straight line. Yeah,
great. Okay, last, I want you to say a message for our listeners. We have listeners all over the world. If you want to say something, and tell them about your website also.
Yeah, so guys, if you want to follow me, I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and my new website will be launched very soon. It's going to be nicojamin.com. So make sure to follow all that, and there's going to be a lot of great content this year.
Merci beaucoup.
Nico, thanks for joining F1weekly.com. Keep up the good work, NASA. I also want to mention that Renault is celebrating 40 years of Formula One. They've got this whole historical F1 thing going on over at Manicourt, and lots of activities, and they're going to have like 10 vintage F1 cars, including Fernando's car. Bravo.
Very good. And sir, you know, while talking about events in your country, Francia, very pleased and thankful to the European F3 Championship Series for giving moi a media credential, and I will be at the Po race, which is something I really, really wanted to go. and I want to do another interview with a guy, young kid, who I'm pretty sure will be in Formula One and make a big name, Mr. Lando Norris. It's a very historical track. They've been racing since the 1930s there. A lot of big names have raced there and won there. And Sarah, the way things are going is almost positive that I will also be able to attend the, or not attend, but go to the Metra Museum in Roma Rota. And depending on how the time goes, I may do also a trip to Rouen track, which was, you know, street circuit, or Manicourt. I'll see how time works out. But I'm looking for a fantastic trip, and we're going to hook up with Dr. Mark and Mr. Brazier at the British F3 race at Snetterton, which is on the same day as the Monaco Grand Prix, which is on the same day as Nando running at the Brickyard. So fantastic month here for us, and hope everything goes, you know, safely and very competitively for all the drivers.
If you go to Roma Rota, you need to get me a souvenir, of course.
I will do so, and you know, I was trying to go on their website on my laptop, or for some reason it kept saying Norton would not allow or recommend you don't go. It's a dangerous website. You know, it's musemetra.fr. Will you do me a favor? When you get a chance, go on their website and see if everything is okay.
Yeah, I'll take a look. Nas, keep up the good work. Any thoughts on the Spanish Grand Prix?
Well, you know, it's pretty obvious it's going to be a silver car or a red car winning. But I think the momentum is now for Sebastian Vettel. And this is not a kid who's going to lie in second place. As we saw, you know, he was after Bottas. And he will be after LCH if LCH is leading the race. I want to see a good, fantastic duel between the two supremely talented drivers. And, you know, I would hate to see a Cablamo or some stupidity decide the championship. So we're looking forward to you know, like the last year, the final race, it got very intense. But NCH was trying to back everybody up with a hidden agenda. But who can blame him? So I want to see it something very, very exciting end to this season.
Keep up the good work. I want to thank everybody who's listening. Good night.
Catch up as a bad mother. Shut your mouth. what I'm talking about, sure.
Well, he can do it.
He's a complicated man, but no one understands him but his woman.
John Jack.